Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, what is coming after Galaxy's Edge? Fireworks with less fireworks?
Rosita has been found, World of Disney has reopened, 6 parks in a day, and more. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of October 31st, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out to Megan, Deborah, and Robert for becoming cast members on Patreon. They're going to get some pretty nice perks like access to the supporter Discord chat, nice DL Weekly swag from Teg and I, and more. As a reminder, we are still sending out a special charter supporter item to the first 50 supporters of the show. If you are one of the first 50 before the end of October at the Park Hopper level or above, you'll receive this special perk. This is a limited item with only 4 spots left. So head on over to DisneylandWeekly.com/support if you would like to support the show.
Well, thank you to all of our patrons for your continued support. We're just $17 away from our next goal, a monthly drawing where we will choose a patron to receive some DL Weekly swag from our store. To find out more about this and other new milestones, head on over to DisneylandWeekly.com/support.
If you want to have a voice in the podcast and in our discussion topics, please head over to DisneylandWeekly.com and click on Discussion Topic Vote at the top to register your vote for the next discussion topic. We have been getting a lot of great responses, so please help be a part of the future of the show.
Now let's get to the news.
Oh, from here you all look like little ants. Ooh, looks like a little rain. No, big rain. Oh, I think I'm going to wet myself.
For those of you already looking beyond Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, there is some new rumored information about the upcoming Marvel-themed Land Coming to California Adventure. The rumor states that it will be completed in 2 phases. They will include a new Spider-Man attraction, a central hub area, a Doctor Strange meet and greet, and an Ant-Man-themed microbrewery. Phase 2 is rumored to have an Avengers roller coaster and a Quinjet.
So what do you think about this?
I am so curious. This is ridiculous, but I'm really curious about the Ant-Man themed microbrewery, because that's a little hard for me to wrap my head around. Is everything going to be tiny, or is everything going to be giant? It could be either way.
I feel like from the concept art that we kind of got before, that the like big silos that hold or make the brew, mm-hmm, are going to look like beer cans, so they're going to be look huge.
Oh,
you know, yeah, like, yeah, here in La Crosse, where we have the world's largest six pack.
There you go.
Look it up, folks. We there have the world's largest six pack in La Crosse.
I am kind of excited. The only thing I was a little disappointed about, and this is all rumors, nothing's been 100% confirmed, but what I was reading about what they are thinking about doing with the Spider-Man attraction, I wasn't too thrilled with that. So the new Spider-Man attraction is going to be going in the area that Tough to Be a Bug was, and actually they started demoing part of that building, yep, already. Anyways, it sounds like they're going to do something where you feel like you're Spider-Man and you get to sling webs at things, much like how you do with when you're shooting things at Toy Story Midway Mania. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really excited about that.
Sounds like another screen-like attraction, yeah, which seems more universal than,
yeah,
Disney.
I guess I'm not excited about that because we have something already like that at, yeah, in California Adventure. So I was hoping for something different. But still, you can still sling webs, but just maybe a different way.
But the good thing is it will be kid-friendly. Because everybody, sure, yes, of all ages be, want it.
It will be kid-friendly. I'm curious, too, about the roller coaster. So I know that they're using the term roller coaster, but is it going to be, like, thrill ride, little kids can't be on it, or is it still going to be family-friendly? Obviously, I'm hoping that it's more family-friendly. I'm really hoping for good theming on it, too.
I probably should have done a little bit more research on this, but the rumor said that it's going to be like the Avengers roller coaster coming to Paris.
Oh, okay.
So I think they've already announced some bits of that over there, but so yeah, I think it's going to be like that. But anytime you use the term roller coaster, I don't think it's going to be family friendly, unfortunately. Well, in another rumor, WDW News Today reports that Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway will be coming to Disneyland in Toontown after Galaxy's Edge is completed. They state that the official announcement will be coming on Mickey and Minnie's birthday, November 18th. Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin and Gadget's Go Coaster are safe, but the Gag Factory is said to close and become the entrance to the new attraction. The attraction will also take up the main entertainment department building backstage and displace the fireworks launching area.
So I have a couple thoughts on this. Thought number one, I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to be really fun, really cool. I know that it's just a rumor, but
our dream of Toontown becoming Nightmare Before Christmas Land or Villain Land.
Yes. They clearly did not listen to our podcast.
Nope.
And let them know how wonderful an idea of that is. But that's okay. I'm sidebarnering that. Thank you for bringing that up. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I was trying to forget about that wonderful thing that we had planned for them.
This attraction looks great, though, from the concept we've seen for Disney World.
Yeah. So I think it'll be fun. I really think it'll bring a little bit of life back to Toontown.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that because they're going to do this, hopefully they will also focus on Toontown a little more and mm-hmm. spruce it up a little bit, kind of give it that fresh coat of paint that it so desperately needs. I am really sad that the Gag Factory is leaving, though. I love that little shop. I don't know if anyone's really taken the time to go in there, but the theming in there is so cool.
Yeah, it's great theming. Yep.
So I'm going to miss that.
Well, think about this. Maybe this will open an opportunity to take another area of Toontown and turn it into another shop because, you know, they don't want to get rid of a shop.
Right, yeah.
So I agree with you. I think it's good. If you're not going to get rid of Toontown, you need to do something mm-hmm. with Toontown. Yep. And I think this is great. This will definitely bring a lot of people to that area of the park. And perhaps because I can't imagine that it would take a terribly long time to construct this new attraction because they've already done all the prep work and stuff for the one out in Hollywood Studios. So it seems like it would be a lot easier. Like they'll have all the kinks worked out by the time they build it for Disneyland. So hopefully after Galaxy's Edge, they'll get it kind of going quick. Although it's going to be another one of those things where it's going to just bring more and more people to the parks. And we'll talk mm-hmm. about more of that later.
Well, along with the rumor of Mickey and Minnie's Railway, the displacement of the fireworks launching area is of concern. WDW News Today also reports that the fireworks show, starting sometime in 2019, will go to projections only on weekdays and add fireworks only on weekends. Now, this is just a rumor, and no more information was provided, but we truly hope that this isn't actually going to be the case.
Oh, I love our fireworks shows.
Exactly.
And if you're going to have a nighttime spectacular that was once fireworks, and it's just going to be projections, I'm going to be very disappointed.
It's just not going to be the same. I think the only reason the projections work is because they go along with the fireworks. Really, the fireworks, for me, is the main attraction, and the it's kind of like an ice cream sundae. The fireworks are the ice cream. The projections are like the sprinkles.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants just sprinkles. You need the ice cream.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that this isn't the case, but time will tell. I do see the other side of it too, because we have talked about how expensive it is for them each night to shoot the volume of fireworks off that they do. So I could see why they'd want to maybe not do the big production with fireworks every single night, and how they would only limit that to maybe during the off, I don't know, however they want to do it, but limit it instead of doing it every single night, because it is a lot of money.
The only plus side I can see from this is, instead of having no nighttime spectacular during the week, they're at least giving you a production show.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this will go year round, where maybe they'll do fireworks during the week for summer or the busy times,
the busy season,
but not do, like, when it's slower, when they normally wouldn't have a nighttime spectacular, they're at least going to do projections. I could get on board for that.
I could be okay with that too.
Well, one thing that is for certain coming to the Tropical Hideaway will be Rosita. If you aren't sure who we are talking about, Rosita is the missing tiki bird from the show. The famous line from Pierre, there's Colette, hello Colette, Suzette, hello Mimi, Gigi, Fifi, Josephine, followed by Jose, I wonder what happened to Rosita.
Poor Rosita.
Never thought about this, but this is clever that they're
very
adding
clever
Rosita to the Tropical Hideaway.
incredibly clever. Good Anya, whoever decided that who connected those dots. I personally, I wouldn't have thought of that, but it's perfect.
Now, I also want to, I want you to thank me because how this all fell, you didn't have to do that, the quote there. So, anyway.
I don't know if I'm thanking you because I know deep down you wanted to do the voice.
Probably.
Well, if you enjoyed having the Tiki Room restroom as your private sanctuary while you did your business, we have some bad news for you. It's gone. Upon reopening of the waiting area for the Tiki Room, it appears that the restroom has been permanently removed. It is possible that there will be more restrooms in the Tropical Hideaway area when that opens, but they probably won't be as private and seldom used as the former Tiki Room restrooms were.
People are very upset about this. Because
it is interesting because they weren't very well known, but the people that use them are very vocal about it.
Yes, because they were, I had actually never used them, but from my understanding, they were like almost like a family restroom. Like it wasn't like a big restroom. It was like one toilet for each sex.
So I was in there during our last visit this spring, and the women's room anyways, you go in, there's one sink and there are two stalls.
Okay.
And that was it. They were very dated. I was actually quite surprised with it being Disney how dated those restrooms looked. And they weren't themed, really.
Well, they were there from when the Tiki Room was going to be a restaurant in its initial concept design. So they built it, and then they realized that people would be so distracted watching the show that they wouldn't eat the food, and you need to, you know, rotate people through there. So, yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like maybe restrooms will show up in the Tropical Hideaway.
You know, I wonder if maybe the restroom's still there, but it's just not open to the public anymore. Maybe it's just a cast member restroom now.
That's true. Well, in Downtown Disney, the World of Disney store has completed its remodel and opened to the public on October 19th. The new store features a ton of holiday merchandise well before Halloween was even over. The newly remodeled store does have a story, like most things Disney. It is themed to be a bus depot that worked with the Grand Californian to take people on tours. After closing, Walt used the space for animators to do their work until 1989, when MGM Studios opened and the team moved out there. The space was used for World of Disney in 2001, with Disneyland becoming a resort. When it was time to do the remodel, they found the old bus shelter there. The checkout areas use the 9 old men's desks that feature their sketches on them. The store features a lot of little touches that make it more than just another retail space.
So I actually I read an article. I believe it was posted on Mice Chat, but it was an article, and it was one of the reporters actually visited both of the World of Disney stores. So there's one in Downtown Disney, and there's also one out in Florida at Disney Springs. And actually, they said, and they thought that we got the better of the two. So that was pretty surprising. I was pretty proud of that. And from what I saw from the photos, I do have to agree. I did like how ours looked better than the Disney Springs version.
And, you know, we've talked about it before. The main objection a lot of people have to this remodel is that it's not as whimsical. And we talked about that before. Mm-hmm. It's not as whimsical as it used to be. Although, this is kind of like a taste of like the Lamplight Lounge, but like in a retail establishment, because it's where the animators worked and you get a little bit of that same kind of thought. It is nice that Disney is using a lot of the animation team in a lot of their stuff. Because, you know, the animation, Disney animation, is not as big and powerful as it once was. So it's nice that they kind of do that nod, because without the animation, the Disney company wouldn't be what it is today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, in a strange turn of events, Disneyland didn't follow Walt Disney World's lead when they raised their ticket prices a couple weeks ago. The Orange County Register surmises that the reason for this is that Disneyland doesn't have any off-season dates like Disney World and can't benefit from the new pricing strategy. If they did follow suit, it would likely mean charging more for busy days and keeping the current high-end rates as the value rate. For Disneyland to keep increasing its revenue but also cutting back on crowds, it will need to make some changes to the annual pass holder program.
Yeah, because unlike Disney World, Disneyland has a huge annual pass base, and you're going to need to do something with that. A lot of the overcrowding is a lot of people who are there with an annual pass all the time. So changing the daily price of a ticket isn't going to affect those people as much. And because the park is so crowded, they're trying to get it so there's less people in the parks. Well, how do you do that? So you can raise the ticket prices, but of course people get upset.
Or they just keep paying it because they really want to go.
That's true, but So the strategy of trying to find like a downtime is just not going to work. So it's interesting to think about. I did not realize that or think about that when Disney World changed their prices, Disneyland would also change their prices, and they haven't. Although we did see a rise in prices, you know, back a few months ago. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it'd be weird for them to raise it twice in one calendar year. But,
you know, the other thing to think about, too, is even, you know, the annual pass holders. Disneyland has only two parks. So if you're an annual pass holder, you could be in Disneyland or California Adventure. Whereas if you were a Walt Disney World pass holder, you have multiple parks to choose from. So yep. It's not really, I mean, I feel bad that they always blame the annual pass holders in Disneyland, but unfortunately the reality is Disney World, they're still there, but they're just more spread out since there's more parks.
You know, when I was writing this, one thing I was thinking of, a way that Disney could help solve this problem, and I know this would not be a popular answer, but I kind of like this park idea. Well, they could do that too, but what I'm thinking is, if you buy an annual pass, mm-hmm. You don't get access like all year round. So let's say you buy an annual pass, and it's more like a bulk discount. So you can pay X amount, and you get 10 days a year. You pay X amount, and you get 50 days a year, or whatever. Or, so you, there's that model. Or there's the model where you buy an annual pass, and then you have to, each day you use it, you have to pay a little extra, but it's not like a full ticket price.
Interesting.
So that would be ways to kind of deter annual pass, because there are annual pass holders that use it like every day almost.
Oh, I would. That right? would totally be me.
And one of the biggest problems that they have at the resort, especially with the parking situation, is that people go to the parks after work. So at night, they're always the busiest. Mm-hmm. During the day, they might have like normal crowds, but at night, everybody gets off work, they want to go to the park, they want to, you know, to catch a show or ride a couple rides, whatever. And so I feel like if you were to, it'd be kind of like punishing people, but it'd be like making sure that people couldn't just do it on a whim. It's more like you have to like actually plan that, like, okay, I really do want to go, instead of, I have a pass that's good all the time, I'll just go all the time. You know what I mean? Because it's such a good value. If I mean, there's people like myself who used to have an annual pass, and I only went like 3 or 4 times a year, so mm-hmm. they were making money off of me.
Yeah.
But there are locals who go all the time, like these everyday people, and they are probably, you can make an argument that they're not losing money on those folks because they're buying food, they're buying souvenirs, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that there are a bunch of people who have annual passes that don't spend money when they go daily. Like, they might buy something every few visits, but not every visit.
Yeah,
so they
actually daily, how could you
are losing to? Money on those people, mm-hmm. and it contributes to the crowding problem.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is if you're one of these daily annual pass holder people that go to the park daily, first of all, I'm jealous of you. But second of all, how often what are they really congesting? I can't believe that they, every day after work, go and ride 10 different attractions every mm-hmm. night. They probably just, I'd say, if anything, they're probably crowding like the restaurants and like the shopping areas and kind of the areas that people are just kind of milling about more.
That's so the problem, I don't the think walkways.
They're really, okay. So I don't think they're really, in the lines.
See, but the lines aren't really the problem. The problem is that all the pathways are clogged up all the time.
Gotcha. Okay. So,
well, depending on when you are listening to this, it may still be too early for Christmas decorations to be going up, but a week before Halloween, Sleeping Beauty Castle has already had its first snowfall. The decorations that make the castle look like it had a dusting of snow in Southern California started to appear last week. Too soon?
I couldn't believe when I first saw photos of this emerging. I honestly thought, my first thought was somebody had to have like photoshopped a photo of the pumpkins with like the snow covered castle. There's no way that they did that at the same time, but they did. And, you know, it'd be interesting if they did something theming wise, if maybe they had like Jack Skellington somewhere near the castle, so it made more sense and tied the snow more into it still being Halloween time at the resort.
Sure.
But to me, it just looks so out of place.
Yeah. So, the problem I have with this is you watch the decorating for the holidays mm-hmm. thing, and they make it seem in those specials that they do all of this decoration in one night. Well, if they do all this decoration in one night, why is there snow now? Why can't there be snow between? You don't even have to do it because the the holidays start, what, the 7th? Of November 7th, I think, or November 9th is the kickoff for the Christmas
November
season.
November 1st. You could have done this November 1st.
Yeah, you could have done it November 1st. You got time.
Waited 1 week. That's all you had to do.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just feel, and this happens in the real world, too, where there's a lot of holiday creep. You know?
Oh, for sure. Where actually, today at work, I was watching them put wreaths out in front on the Main Street downtown area.
Already? Oh, jeez.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I just wish, okay, fine, I get that you're trying to, like, you're creeping on the holiday. That's fine. You have the perfect opportunity to tie this holiday in to the next one with Nightmare Before Christmas. They should do something with that, I think. I don't know if you need to put, like, maybe Jack Slay up there or what, but if you somehow tied Nightmare Before Christmas into your creeping snow and your creeping Christmas decorations, you got to tie it in.
So what would you think about them putting the snow, not the icicles, but the snow, on the castle when they decorate for Halloween?
Maybe not that early.
Well, if you put, like, Jack with it, then it thematically fits.
I think that can be, like... So we're going to have Halloween time, which is already starting beginning of September. If that's probably going to start creeping into August. So we already have Halloween time starting in September. They could put Jack on the... It could be like Halloween time part two. They could put
Jack... So like
Jack,
for October?
Yeah,
the
put
end of
Jack
October.
On like in October, mid-October or something.
I like that idea. That's a good idea.
Beginning in January at Disneyland, Mickey and Minnie will be donning their celebration outfits for the 90th anniversary of Mickey Mouse. The first place to see the new look will be in Hong Kong and Shanghai Disneyland beginning in November. Holy cow, I am so excited for these outfits. They're so simple, but I love them so much.
I've seen them, but I need to click to look at them again because I didn't really
so
pay too close
Mickey
attention.
So Mickey is in this like tuxedo, right?
Oh, it looks like Funfetti tuxedo.
Crisp white tuxedo. And it looks like he's just like been covered in colorful confetti. Minnie's got this very cute skirt on that has, it's almost, I don't know, it almost reminds me, not like gumballs, but it's got these little like puffy things in there, like little pom-poms, but very bright and colorful.
Between the layers.
So her dress is white. And between the layers of the dress are these little colorful pom-poms. And she's got these nice poofy sleeves that also have the little pom-poms in there, too. I don't know why, but they kind of slightly remind me of gumballs more so than Mickey definitely has confetti all over him. But they just look so darn classy, I think. They're very sharp. I love them.
Yeah, this is a good look. I don't know. I'm so torn because I love the classic Mickey, the black, the yellow, the red. But this is nice. I like it. It's interesting because it looks like he's been hit with confetti and it just like stuck to his suit. But
yep. And I guess maybe Minnie is supposed to be more reminiscent of the balloons. And
oh,
that's
maybe.
Why she's got the round pom-pom things.
Now, do you find it interesting that Hong Kong and Shanghai are getting them in November?
I'm jealous.
Yeah, and everybody else is getting them after the new year.
I do like that, though, because that's really, you know, they're celebrating Mickey's birthday.
Yeah. If you can't wait until November 21st to see Ralph Breaks the Internet, Disneyland has you covered. A 3D sneak preview is coming to the Tomorrowland Theater from November 9th to December 9th. Nothing too exciting here. It's just another preview for the show for a movie.
I love that they're doing these sneak peeks, though. I think it's great. It's a good use of both of those theaters that would otherwise be sitting empty.
Playing when you were there?
When I was there, nothing... Oh, the Tomorrowland Theater was Star Wars. And at...
Was it the Pixar Film Fest?
No, it was not the Pixar. Actually, no, it wasn't. The Pixar Film Fest wasn't going on. They paused it because it was, let me think, Incredibles. They were previewing, so the Pixar Film Fest was actually on hold because they were having the sneak peek of The Incredibles 2.
Gotcha,
which
that makes sense.
The coolest part about that, and I shared photos of this in our Discord chat, but they had all of these little, like, models of what the characters were going to look like and models of like Elastigirl's like motorcycle that she rides in the film. And just, it was really cool. And they had a lot of like sketches and stuff out. So they had like a little display of things related to Incredibles 2 in the waiting area before you went in to see the 3D preview of Incredibles 2. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
So right now, the Sunset Showcase Theater, I don't remember if we've mentioned this, but they are previewing the new Nutcracker movie.
Are you excited for that one?
It looks really interesting. I never really got into the Nutcracker when I was growing up and like didn't really care that much about the ballet and all that stuff. But this looks like a really unique spin on the classic tale. So I am curious about it.
I feel like a lot of these movies, and we're kind of getting a little off track, but I feel like a lot of these movies, they like look like eye candy. Like my eyes are going to rot from watching it because like they're just so beautiful.
Yeah.
But then I feel most of the time that I'm let down by the actual story or the content. You know what I mean? Like, it's very cool to look at, but then that's kind of the bulk of it. I don't know.
A new model of stroller has been seen around the resort, replacing the older models that have been around for quite some time. The new model appears to be smaller with less storage than the old model, but the guests seem to be liking the new design.
Yeah, when I saw this online, somebody had said that like the kids seemed to enjoy it, like it wasn't like uncomfortable or anything. Mm-hmm. It does look a little smaller. I like
it's
the blue.
It's very slim.
Yeah, I like the blue color because they used to be this like green color and now they're blue. And I like blue better than green.
Yeah, the thing that I think is nice about them is I think how they're designed, it will be easier for like the stroller parking areas. You're going to be able to fit quite a few more strollers mm-hmm. in than you could before because it's a very sleek and very streamlined design. I really like it. The kid has a nice little seat and it looks like they've got a nice little foot rest area that's actually quite large, so you could
put something there,
you know, something else there too. So
it looks like it'd be very difficult to tip too because it looks like mm-hmm. the wheels are kind of angled out.
They do. They look sturdy.
Yeah.
Very sturdy.
The only problem that people have with this, well, first of all, we've reported on this in the past. People get their strollers stolen.
Yes,
so just rent these.
Unfortunate.
And then you don't have to worry about it. But the thing that people complain about is they're $15 a day. Mm-hmm. If you rent two, they're two for $25. So, well, Disney has chosen Children's in Orange County, or CHOC, to participate in the Disney Team of Heroes initiative. This initiative provides resources to make the patient and family experiences better. The Walt Disney Company has dedicated more than $100 million to this effort. The Texas Children's Hospital in Houston was the first hospital to benefit from this. The goal is to ease the stress of a hospital stay. The program includes customer experience training for the staff of the hospitals as well, including doctors and nurses.
I think this is so great. And honestly, I'm surprised that Disney hadn't kind of taken a local hospital more under its wing with this program before. I know that they are active and they do other things for the hospitals around the area, especially the children's hospitals mm-hmm. around the area too. But it's just great. I just always think that it's so wonderful that a company of this size takes the time to better their communities and better things for people that are less fortunate or in more stressful times.
Yeah, well, think about being a kid and having to go through like a surgery or something, yeah. Right? Like how scary mm-hmm. that can be. And so the Walt Disney Company with this initiative basically makes it, they work on like the experience training, customer experience training for staff and the doctors and the nurses so they can have a little bit potentially better bedside manner. Not to say the doctors don't have a good bedside manner, but sometimes maybe they're not as experienced with like children and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they train on that. And characters get to show up. It said in the article too that they do storylines and stuff. So can you imagine being a kid and like maybe as part of this elaborate kind of story is your whatever procedure you're having, and so it's a little less scary because it's like you're not alone. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think that could be really cool. And plus, $100 million, that's how much Indiana Jones cost to build. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. Well, speaking of a lot of money, a couple from Tennessee was able to visit all six of the U.S. Disney parks in one day. Heather and Clark Ensminger set the goal to ride one attraction and eat one thing in each park that they visited. They started in Hollywood Studios, rode all of the attractions in Toy Story Land, where they also ate breakfast. They then went to Epcot, where they rode Spaceship Earth and had Mickey premium ice cream bars. Magic Kingdom was next, where they rode the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and picked up some of LeFou's brew. After taking pictures with Mickey, they headed over to the Animal Kingdom, where they rode Avatar Flight of Passage, had lunch at the Satouli Canteen. Then it was off to the airport to fly to LAX, to take an Uber to the parks, arriving at roughly 8 p.m. They rode the Incredicoaster and Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout and had a churro. Finally, they made it to Disneyland, where they rode the Indiana Jones Adventure and finished up with corn dogs on Main Street.
First of all, I was looking, when I was writing this, Toy Story Land's brand new. Tons of lines.
Yes.
They rode everything.
Yes.
Okay. Then They wrote Spaceship Earth, fine.
Always a line. Yep. That's always
Magic
busy.
Kingdom, Seven Dwarves Mine Train. Always that another always line. That is always a big line.
Maybe, you know what, though? We don't know. Maybe they were thinking ahead and they got fast passes.
Well, but you can only have fast passes for one park at a time, so they had to have gotten that when they left or whatever. And then Flight of Passage, again, another long line there. And then they came over here and rode the Incredicoaster and Guardians. Again, more long lines. Indiana Jones. I just feel like they added a little bit of a challenge because they went on all of the huge rides that everybody's in lines for.
They weren't messing around. It was no teacup rides for them, no little Dumbo ride. You know, they weren't doing the things that don't have the long waits. They were doing the things that had very long waits. Hopefully, they just timed it correctly. I'm impressed that they were able. The Incredicoaster. How did they get on the Incredicoaster that fast?
That's all I got to say is if you're interested in seeing the entire timeline, because the article at the Orange County Register has a timeline of what time they hit everything, there's a link in our show notes. So I was very impressed. I've seen that people have done this before. They've done all the parks. Impressed. But a lot of times they don't ride stuff. They just kind of go in, take a picture, they maybe grab something, then leave. This was, and the fact that there are these popular attractions is just
mind
crazy.
And they stop for not only one, but two full meals. How did you have time to sit down at the restaurant?
And they took pictures with Mickey.
Yeah. Crazy. Good for you two. Good job, Heather.
Yeah, congratulations.
That is an accomplishment. Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us, and usually does, with Disney trivia. He will read us the question tag, and I will attempt to answer them, and then James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
Well, good question. We're going to first not only test your Disney knowledge, but my ability to count this week.
Oh, boy.
So your first question.
Counting is hard.
I know. I had to, like, triple check my numbers, and I'm still not confident.
Oh, Lord.
So how many attractions in the resort have fast passes?
Oh.
19 with Jungle Cruise. I'm going to say 18 because I don't think... Actually, I'm going to say 17 because I'm not counting Jungle Cruise or It's a Small World Holiday. You're doing 19 though, right? Because you're counting all that
stuff. Yep, I'm doing 19.
Okay, so Teresa's 19. I'm 17.
See if anyone else was able to count better than you were along the way.
Probably.
Question number two. So as you probably remember, there used to be mermaids in Lagoon that now houses Finding Nemo's Adventure. What was the reason that the mermaids were retired?
A couple reasons. One, their blonde hair kept turning green.
Mm-hmm. From the
and
chemicals.
Young men used to try to swim out to be with them.
I think
them.
That's my favorite part, is the young men. I really think it was the chemicals. And it got to the point that the poor cast members that were portraying these mermaids, they weren't really able to be out for very long each day.
Yeah. I'm going to say, if I have to pick one thing, I'm going to say the men. And you're going to say the chemicals?
I'm going to say the chemicals.
Okay, so one of us is probably right.
It's probably really a combination of the two.
I think there were a lot of reasons, yeah. So we'll enjoy going over the one that I have written down.
Sure.
Question number three, and this was submitted to me by Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
So most of the sails on the ships in Peter Pan's flight have black sails with white skulls. But if you're lucky, you'll get one that has red sails and black skulls. How many ships have this pattern?
Wow. That's a good question, Melissa.
Three.
I have no idea.
Pick a number.
I remember it opposite. I remember seeing more red sails than black sails.
Pick a number then.
I don't know how many ride vehicles there are. That's my problem. I'm going to say 10.
Okay. Teresa says 10.
All right. And the last question, a little bit of celebrity history.
Okay.
Michelle Pfeiffer worked at Disneyland in the 1970s as a face character. Who did she play?
Ooh.
She played
Michelle
Aurora.
Pfeiffer. I was going to say Cinderella.
I'm just imagining patron Laura screaming at the two of you right now with the right answer. We'll see.
She played Ariel, probably, if that's the answer.
We will see how you two
did. Oh, it was the 70s. Ariel wasn't a character then.
Yeah. Late 70s was, yeah, no, Cinderella was.
Yeah.
Aurora was.
Yeah. All right, so for our discussion topic this week, we are actually going to do two different discussion topics, but because this episode is being released on Halloween, we're going to talk about Halloween.
I am so excited about this because it is history of Halloween, so I got to do all sorts of research, which we all know how much I like to research.
Did I tell you, by the way, speaking of Halloween, did I tell you that I watched Nightmare Before Christmas last night?
For the first time?
For this season, yep.
Oh, okay. That's only slightly forgivable. I thought it was the first time ever, and I was going to have to kick you.
No.
While I'm sitting here wearing my Sally ears.
I saw it in the movie theater when it came out.
Thank you, Alex.
I saw it.
Okay, you're
forgiven. When it came out in the theater.
You're forgiven.
So I had not seen it for a long time. I agree with you on the music. I had not seen it for a long time, Teresa, and I know that's probably like heresy. But two things that always, well, one thing always sticks out to me. That movie is only like 68 minutes long, but it feels longer in a good way. But Oogie Boogie really isn't in it that much. But people love Oogie Boogie, and it seemed, for some reason in my mind, he was in it a lot more, but he wasn't.
Well, it's interesting because technically he's in it a lot, you just don't see him.
Yeah, you see like shadows of him.
You see shadows of him, you hear his voice, he's mm-hmm. referenced quite a bit. But yeah, he's not actually, really, the end is when he shows up.
Yeah. Can we also take this moment while we're talking about Nightmare to talk about your Halloween costume?
Are you judging my Halloween
costume? No, like, tell our listeners what you were. Because our Discord chat knows, but not everybody else. That's
true. So this past weekend, one of my friends hosted a Halloween party, and she is also a huge fan of Nightmare Before Christmas. So she actually did a Nightmare Before Christmas themed Halloween party.
Some of the props looked amazing.
The props were just incredible. She and her boyfriend went as Jack and Sally. They did a very nice job too. But Vern and I did a little bit different take of it. We went as Locke and Shock, two of Oogie's henchmen or whatever you want to call them. So two, the little trick-or-treaters. So we went as the one that looks like the witch and the one that looks like the devil. So that was really fun.
Very Vern of, I could see Vern in this Shock.
So originally Vern was going to go as Beryl. Because I had found the masks for the three of them and had to buy them because they're just really awesome.
You bought
awesome.
All the masks?
Yep, I bought all the masks just because they're really awesome. And originally he really wanted to be Beryl, and I looked at him because his hair was kind of long. He's since got it cut this weekend, but his hair was long. So I told him, like, you've got to go with the little guy that's the devil because...
Did he do his hair like that too?
He tried to.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, looked like the horns or whatever you want to call it. Like... Mm-hmm. The characters does, but unfortunately halfway through the night his hair was a little bit too long, so it kind of flopped, so he just had the lovely like middle down his head part. We did color his hair red for
not enough
well.
Aquanet.
Yeah, apparently not.
It was, but anyways, really cool.
Back to Halloween.
Sure. Sorry.
And the history at the resort. So this I found so interesting. The history of Halloween at Disneyland actually predates the park itself.
What?
Which is just crazy to me, because really when you think of Halloween time at the resort, you think that this is a relatively new thing, which makes sense because the true Halloween time celebration as we know and love it today actually began in 2006. Haunted Mansion Holiday first started in 2001, so relatively not that long ago. But Disney, the company, actually participated in the Anaheim Annual Halloween Festival. Hmm. And the first one that they participated in was in 1953. This festival in the city of Anaheim actually extended all the way back to 1924. So
wow,
that's just incredible to me. But they had this whole big festival. They did. Disney was very involved with the parade. Mm-hmm. I guess would be a good way of explaining their involvement. So there's a whole big article that I found on this that was published by Disneyland Compendium, blogspot.com, that we will link to the show notes if you guys want to mm-hmm. really look and dig into the history. They go into really great detail about the Anaheim Halloween Festival. And it was really cool. So it's interesting to me, especially at this point in time, looking back at how good of a relationship Disney and Disneyland had with the city of Anaheim back when they first started, compared to, unfortunately, what it's now become
right.
today. Disney first participated by helping design floats for the parade that this festival put on. And actually, I think they kind of were trying to get Disney involved, because this is back when Anaheim was almost kind of courting the Disney company, trying to get them to decide to build their park in Anaheim, because there were rumors that Disney was looking in Anaheim. So they were trying to, you know, I guess, invite them and, you know, be good neighbors. And so they had actually a division of the parade that was fairy themed. And they had characters such as Snow White, Peter Pan, and Pinocchio that were involved with the Fairyland division of the parade.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of the Rose Parade, because Disney usually has like a float in the Rose Parade, which is also another big, you know, big parade that everybody kind of knows about. So that's really interesting that it was beforehand and that like they used it. Because honestly, when I think of Anaheim before Disneyland was there, I feel like there really wasn't anything there. So it's interesting that they have this festival going on that was so popular before really anything was there. Which is
they had
crazy.
To have something to do.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
So then, so that was 1953, their first involvement with this local festival. So then in 1954, when construction on Disneyland was going on, they also had another strong presence at the annual festival. And the actual theme for that festival was Legends and Fantasies. Again, I think that kind of was on purpose to coincide with Disneyland. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really cool because Donald Duck actually served as the Grand Marshal for that parade.
Oh, of course. This is interesting to me because I always forget this fact. But there was a period in time where Disneyland was closed on Mondays. And who would, like, nowadays that'd just be nuts. Because, like,
right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It's so crowded. People would be, like, crazy climbing the gates and everything. But the very first Halloween day in 1955... was on a Monday that the park was closed. So they couldn't even celebrate Halloween at the park that first
crazy.
Year. And the other tidbit that I found from this article that I thought was interesting was that Disneyland was closed 9 times on Halloween because of it falling on the different months or whatever. So it's crazy.
So the other cool thing, though, was in that first year, this, to me, I think is extra cool since I have seen these wagons, but the Disneyland Circus wagons were part of the Halloween parade for Anaheim that year, and they were given the honors as the best horse-drawn float. So I thought that was really cool too.
Imagine this. So again, we were talking about Disneyland being closed on Mondays, right? Mm-hmm. Like unheard of. Well, how about this? Back in 1994, Disneyland offered free admission to anyone who showed up at its gates before 8:30 a.m. in a costume.
Could you imagine if they did that today, how long that line would be and how far in advance that line would start?
Well, it said here that the popularity of the event caught everybody off guard.
Oh, yeah.
So gridlock developed around the park and backed up the Santa Ana Freeway, keeping many from gaining the free admittance they sought. Community schools weren't too thrilled with this promotion, and the stunt wasn't repeated. 1994 also marked the first year of the continuing cast member exclusive event Little Monsters on Main Street. Following that whole debacle, the very first time they had a themed event for Halloween was the next year in 1995, and it was called Mickey's Halloween Treat. They were held on the evenings of the 26th, 27th, 30th, and 31st, and it's supposed to be complementary to Knott's events rather than in competition, because apparently Knott's Berry Farm had been putting on holiday you know, things for Halloween. And so they did trick-or-treating at 50 locations around the park, a kid's costume cavalcade, which, as we've said before, is what you like to believe is a little parade, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I just remember you saying that, like, I've decided it's a parade. And seasonal food items, which is funny because you think about this back in 1995, it's very similar to that now with, like, Mickey's Halloween Party, because you got the same thing. You got trick-or-treating, and you've got kids can wear costumes and seasonal food items.
Yep, it's the birthplace. I'm going to back up just a little bit in time, because we skipped something.
We are all over the place.
Yes. Well, we've been going pretty well down the timeline of things, but we skipped something that I find super unique, and considering what Halloween time is at the resort today is crazy to me that this was even a thing. But way back in 1983, park spokesman Bob Roth basically said that Disneyland was conceding from Halloween festivities. They were not going to take a part in it.
Oh.
Part of that had something to do with Knott's Berry Farm had very good success with their Halloween haunt. So they kind of, Disneyland kind of decided not to really go all out with Halloween time. And it was because they were using that time as a lead-in for Mickey's month. Because as you guys all know, Mickey's birthday is in November.
Right.
And they just were really focusing more on the mouse. So yeah. I think that is just crazy that they purposely were not going to be celebrating Halloween time at the resort. Could you imagine? I mean, today, no Halloween time at the resort. Right. That would just be crazy.
Well, they celebrate like everything at the resort. I know. Now.
Everything's a celebration. Yeah. So the fact that they purposely were like, nope, not going to do that. Well, and also, I found it very interesting that they realized that their competitor was doing very well and they didn't want to compete with that. I thought that was very
interesting.
That
is an interesting way to look at it. But, you know, Walt Disney, anything Walt Disney Company related, in a lot of ways, they don't really have to compete because they have like such a different product,
oh,
I think.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And I feel like nowadays, some of their competition like Universal and Knott's Berry Farm on some levels are competing now because they have, you know, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Great competition mm-hmm. for Disney. But what I find interesting about this whole thing was it took to the mid-90s for them to start doing anything Halloween. And nowadays, what, 25 years later, Halloween is such a commercialized big thing. Mm-hmm. It's, what, the second biggest holiday after Christmas in the United States?
Yeah.
It is amazing to me that in just that short amount of time, it's become this huge, big thing that, like, obviously they would have to do something. So in 2001, they did the Haunted Mansion holiday, like we've talked about previously, which has been very popular. And I remember this now that I'm reading this, but Halloween time didn't start until September 29th, 2006, which
yeah.
is amazing because that's like almost October and like that'd be unheard of here now because everything starts at the beginning of September now. Mm-hmm. But 2006 was not that long ago. What was that? 13
it
years ago?
It wasn't that long
12
ago.
12 years ago?
Yeah.
But well, I remember the Halloween time sign going up. In fact, I think I have a picture somewhere of the first Halloween time because that's when I had a pass and was going all the time.
There you go. I do remember that because I remember, like you guys all know, I'm a huge fan of the Nightmare Before Christmas. And when I learned about the Haunted Mansion holiday overlay with Jack Skellington and all of his friends, I wanted to go. And clearly, living in the Midwest, not as easy for me to get there as it was for Tag, who just lived a couple of hours away.
Yes,
and I remember
couple hours.
It being this, like, I always felt like it was just this little tiny slice of time. And it truly was. It was just really, you know, there was not a very long time for that holiday overlay. Now it feels like it's half the year is the holiday right. overlay. So I do remember kind of feeling a pinch and a rush that you like had to get there in this certain set amount of time. Otherwise, you'll never see it. You know, that kind of like, I don't want to say panicky feeling, but kind of.
Right.
So I just thought that was interesting. I thought that the thing with how good of a relationship Disney had with the city of Anaheim, you know, specifically started with their involvement in the Halloween festival. So I thought that was very cool. The other thing that we're going to just kind of briefly discuss that everybody has seen in the park, but most people may not really know the history of it, is the Halloween tree. This is a tree that is actually located over by the Golden Horseshoe Saloon over in Frontierland. It's a big oak tree. And every Halloween since 2007, this tree gets a little Halloween makeover, and it actually is celebrating one of America's most prolific writers. So Ray Bradbury was the famed author behind different things like Fahrenheit 491, had a long history with the Disney Company, all that sort of thing. But anyways, he actually started really enjoying the holiday of Halloween because of when he was a child, he really loved watching the silly symphony short, The Skeleton Dance.
Oh yeah, it's a classic.
Yep. And back in 1964, Bradbury and Walt Disney actually met and they became friends. And they collaborated, joined forces on different projects at Disneyland and the Walt Disney World resorts, including Spaceship Earth at Epcot. Anyways, so the author celebrated his love of Halloween with his novel, The Halloween Tree, which was written and produced, which was written and published back in 1972. I personally haven't read it, but it basically talks about the adventures of a group of trick-or-treaters who learn about, you know, where the holiday began while searching for a missing friend. So anyways, it was always Bradbury's dream to have his book kind of like immortalized, I guess, and be part of the Disney park. So in 2007, which was the 35th anniversary of the novel, his dream came true, which perfect place for dreams to come true.
Of
happiest
course.
Place on earth. But the Frontierland Oak was given its first makeover. It had twinkling orange lights, hand-painted jack-o'-lanterns, and Bradbury was quoted by saying, "I belong here in Disneyland. Ever since I came here 50 years ago, I'm glad I'm going to be a permanent part of the spirit of Halloween at Disneyland." And there is a plaque at the base of the tree that I would like for you guys to go kind of check out and just kind of just kind of take a moment and think about the history of it. Because again, it's one of those things that's there, like the petrified tree. It's there. Thousands of millions of people walk past these things and they don't really know the significance of them. So if you have a chance, take a moment and kind of pay your respects to the Halloween tree and its really cool background.
It's such a simple thing with such meaning behind it.
Yes.
Like, if you look at all the other things that are done for Halloween time, you know, there's some really grand things. There's a lot of stuff everywhere. But this is just one little tree in Frontierland that they decorate, and it looks great. And, you know, I never, before you just said all this, I actually didn't know anything about it except for that it was the Ray Bradbury tree is what everybody always called it. So thank you for educating us about that tree. So if you are going to be in the parks in the next day or two, I guess, from releasing this, it'll probably still be up. But, or in the
coming years.
Yep.
You know what, though? I don't know for certain, and I should have paid attention. I was a bad Halloween No. I was a bad Disney history enthusiast the last time I was there because I did not take the time. I don't know if that I feel like that plaque is there year round, but I very well could be wrong on that. It might only be there when the Halloween tree is in its full glory.
Yeah.
It is. I feel like that tree, though, year round is known as the Halloween tree, even though, you know, even when it's not decorated.
Yeah. I think so, too. I think you might be right with that.
Really cool piece of Disney history that, like I said, you don't really know what the history is. You're just like, oh, cool, look at that tree. It's got jack-o'-lanterns hanging in it. That's neat.
Yeah.
Moving on, you know. So I thought it was cool that there's actually a real story behind it.
Agreed. Well, the next part of the discussion topic we're going to talk about is growth and prices. So what spurred this was the Orange County Register posted an article on the day we're recording called "Is There a Downside to the Phenomenal Growth of Theme Parks and Their Prices?" So the article is really great because they're talking about how people might look at theme parks right now and think that it's a golden age of theme parks. People, Galaxy's Edge is being built. They're building a new second parking garage to handle all the people that are going to come to this. We just talked about how they're probably bringing Mickey's Runaway Railway, and you've got Marvel Land. So there's all this, and this is just the Disneyland Resort. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, Universal's been building a lot of stuff, like we talked about in the previous discussion. And so there's all this stuff going on. I wanted to just point out one thing before we get started. So if you look at the top 25 largest amusement parks worldwide in order of their annual attendance, of course, Magic Kingdom and Disney World is number one. And just think about this, Teresa. So in 2008, so they've got numbers on Wikipedia from 2008 to 2017. In 2008, just over 17 million people walked through the Magic Kingdom's gates. You think that's exciting? Almost 20.5 million people came through the gates in 2017. So that's
Holy
quite a jump.
Cow.
Number two, Disneyland. In 2008, it was 14.7-ish million, and now it's 18.3. So 4 more million people a year are going to Disneyland, so overcrowding,
wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we have Tokyo Disneyland. So the top three are Disney parks. Then you got Universal Studios, Tokyo Disney Sea, and then you got Animal Kingdom Epcot. And way down the list at number 13 is California Adventure, which in 2008, before the makeover of Buena Vista Street, California Adventure had 5.56 million, and this last year had 9.57 million.
Wow.
So quite an increase with all that stuff. So with all of these numbers and all of these people going to the parks, you know, is that a bad thing, right? Because it should be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this article, they talk about how actually, I like this line they used in this, the light that shines on one side of a wall casts a shadow on the other. So as they expand and earn record revenue, a lot of fans are complaining because they're charging more. It's costing a lot more money to go to these things. You know, they're spending the money on the parks, which is nice, but there's overcrowding because people obviously realize it's a good value, I guess, for all the stuff you get there. But then it's overcrowded. And so there's really no downtime anymore.
Well, and the other problem, too, is there's so many things that you have to, like, things that are beneficial, but they cost you more. MaxPass
mm-hmm.
being one of those examples. Yep. It's a great tool, but that's an extra charge.
Mm-hmm. So the question they pose at the end, which I thought was really interesting, is how do they bridge or widen the gap between they want to make more money, they want to make profit, but they also want to make the parks more enjoyable for everybody by bringing attendance down. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that? Because there's going to be people, and with Disney parks, I firmly believe you could charge $500 a day and people will still go to Disneyland.
Yeah, I agree.
But what does that do? That makes it so a lot of the, you know, middle class and the lower middle class, the people that
And just think of a family. Say you have a family of four and it's $500 a head for one day. That is $2,000 just to walk through the gate.
Oh, yeah.
Who can afford that? Not very many people.
Well, no, and that's the point. The other thing that's happening, and I've thought about this a bunch of times, because when you were there, didn't they have a Halloween party one of the nights you were there? No, you were there in June. Who was there recently?
So when I was there, they had grad nights.
That's what it was.
When Alex was there recently. Grad nights didn't affect me that much because they only shut down California Adventure. I was still able to go have fun in Disneyland, which for me, if I had to choose between one or the other, I'd much rather be in Disneyland.
But you had park hoppers, right?
Yes, we had the park hoppers.
So
tickets.
For that day, the point is, for that day, your mm-hmm. ticket was actually, what you paid for that day, you actually got less.
That's true.
So the fact that they have all of these different things where they offer hard ticket after hours events that cut the amount of parks available to regular ticket mm-hmm. and annual pass holders, that kind of does that thing where they can make extra money.
Well, and remember, cut down on things. We just had a listener, Alex, who was on our show a couple weeks ago, who had just gotten back to the parks, and he ended up attending two of Mickey's Halloween party nights because he was trying to make the most out of his time there because he is also from the Midwest. He doesn't get out there very often. And so the first day that he had tickets was a Mickey's Halloween party night. And if he wouldn't have bought that extra party ticket, he would have had to leave the resort. I believe it was 6 p.m. that he would have had to have left Disneyland. And so for him, since he had a short amount of time, it was worth it for him to spend the extra money to buy the party ticket to be able to stay in the park longer. I think he did a really good job because we heard how many times he rode multiple of the big attractions. So thankfully it worked out for him, but it did. I mean, not everybody can afford to have to buy basically two tickets to enjoy the park for a full day.
Well, think about this too. We have a survey on our website that we don't really push that often, but people can go on there and click. Mm-hmm. And basically it asks them about, you know, what their favorite thing about the show is, what their least favorite thing about the show is. Do they support us on Patreon? If they don't, why not? And I will tell you, almost every time somebody posts why they don't support us on Patreon, it's because they can't afford it right now or they're saving for a Disney trip, even a dollar a month, right? So those are the people who are hurt most by these price increases. Mm-hmm. The people who, like you said, want to bring their families. So...
Well, and the people like us, who it's not just the park ticket, it's the hotel stay, it's the airline ticket, it's the parking to keep our car at the airport while we're gone.
Sure.
Plus all the food costs. I mean, it's just plus, 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 mm-hmm. plus. So the fact that you're raising part of this whole big bill makes a huge impact.
Right. Now, do you have any suggestions on what they could do other than raise prices to try to figure this situation out? I don't know if there is an answer other than raising prices, unfortunately.
Yeah, I really don't know. The only thing that I kind of wish that they maybe would have done, which obviously it's too late now, is if they would have added a third park. If Galaxy's Edge would have become part of a third park. Because then, like we were talking about earlier with the annual pass holders, there's more places to go, so you can still have the same amount of people. They're just going to be more spread out.
Yep.
I do wonder, though, if adding attractions and adding space that they're trying to do right now with Galaxy's Edge, with the expansion of Toontown, with the expansion in California Adventure with Marvel Land, kind of making more areas that people want to go to, just plus physically more space, if that over time won't also help with crowd issues, because once the hype and the newness wears off, there's just going to be more space for people to spread out in.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Selfishly, I will say one thing that I really enjoy right now is, for the longest time, well, actually up until Galaxy's Edge, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like maybe I'm missing something, but I feel like the last new attraction, like E-Ticket, was Indiana Jones back in 95. That's a long time to not get a new E-Ticket attraction.
For Disneyland?
Yeah. Because, of course, Disney California Adventure opened, and that added a lot of e-tickets, but that's not in Disneyland. Because a lot of people don't complain about California Adventure being too packed. It's always Disneyland, because it wasn't built for that many people, right? Because yeah, in the 50s, not that many people were doing it. They were closed on Mondays, like we were talking about. So I'm just, you know, I'm happy that they're bringing stuff, because I feel like the runway... I feel like the railway attraction that's going to be in Toontown is very e-ticket-like. Of course, the two attractions that are coming into Galaxy's Edge are e-tickets. So it just seems to me like, you know, for a while there, they were doing a pretty good clip of it because they had built Splash Mountain.
The mountains, was an attraction. Basically all the mountains.
Yeah, all that stuff like fairly closer together than what we've had to wait to get another one. So, but I think you're right. I think adding another land... You're adding acreage where people can go.
Space.
Which is nice. But, again, you're also bringing in more people for those areas, at least in the beginning.
So, hopefully, maybe somebody from the Imagineer team is listening now, since they weren't listening about our idea about Toontown. So, we're going to again, throw it out there. Let's get a villains-themed land. That's what I would like. We can put it...
Park.
I don't know.
A villains park.
Oh, yes. Park. Sorry. Yes. We want a park, not just a land. They deserve the whole area.
There you go.
And I'm curious, again, this I feel this still kind of ties back in. I really, really have my fingers like double, quadruple, triple crossed that they're going to do an overhaul with Tomorrowland as we know it now, get the Pixar-themed things and the Star Wars themes out, because we have dedicated areas for those themings and those properties now. And rework that, because that's a lot. That honestly, that's a lot of space. So they could get a lot, you know, kind of revitalize that area. This is the perfect time to do it, especially because the crowds are all going to be back in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge for a little while. Yep. So it's going to have a little less impact if you shut that area down now.
Sure. Although I did see, and this is a little off topic, but I did see rumors that they're going to, the next big project on their planning situation is a remodel of a rework of Fantasyland, which I don't really think needs it. I don't feel like Fantasyland needs, because they were talking about expanding as part of this rework. And one of the things that people brought up, in fact, I think Doug in our chat brought it up a couple times too, is, you know, Snow White and Pinocchio that are not as popular, getting rid of those and replacing them with new dark rides, or combine to put one attraction in there instead of two, kind of over there. And then, of course, Fresh Baked on YouTube was saying that they wanted to build a, like they did with the Fantasyland expansion in Disney World in the Magic Kingdom, where they have the Belle's Castle restaurant thing. They want to put that over in that area where the
I love the look of that from the outside. The forced perspective of that castle is so so cool, and I also just love that you have all of the princesses. Well, not all, but a lot of the princesses' castles in their fantasy land. To me, it's a little bit more fantasy-like than what Disneyland is.
So
now,
you'd be kind of supporting this to be over in that area where the monorails loops around?
Yes, I was going to say, I think that they need to use that area of land in front of kind of where the Matterhorn queue area is, underneath the monorail.
Between It's a Small World and Matterhorn?
Yes, what did that used to be? It used to
motorboat
be,
cruise.
Yes, the motorboat cruise. I wish they would... do something there. Because really, that's, again, that's a lot of, you need to utilize, you don't have much space, unfortunately. You need to utilize every inch to its fullest possibilities and potentials. I don't know how I feel about getting rid of things like Pinocchio and Snow White, or even Peter Pan or Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Well, I don't think
Ride.
Peter Pan's going anywhere.
But just, I don't know how I feel in general about, you know, I like, as we all know, I like the history of things. And so I don't think I want those classic films to kind of be forgotten and kind of move out of the park. I do think that you do need to keep things current. But it's a hard balance to figure out, you know, what stays and what goes.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know what? This is a great topic. We would love to hear from you guys about what do you think about The history of Halloween is a good one. If you have any information,
any extra stuff, we'd love to hear.
Of course. Were you there for this, for some of the beginning Halloween stuff or some of the 1990s Halloween stuff? That'd be awesome. Or even 2006 when they first did Halloween time. Send us that information. And then growth in prices. I mean, do you guys think it's a heyday right now, or do you kind of think that it's getting towards kind of the dark side? So let us know what you guys think. We'd love to read some of your feedback on the main show. If you guys do email us about either of these topics, we definitely will include it on our next week's show, which I believe is a live show. Is that right, Teresa?
It is. Next week is the live show for our patrons that are a cast member level and above. So it is not too late to join if you guys join before that live show. So if you join on Patreon and become a supporter before next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Central Time, you will still be able, we do unlock that right away for our new patrons too. Even mm-hmm. though technically you haven't officially become a patron, you have signed up, we'll let you in.
Yep, exactly. Also, if you're one of the next four people and you do it today, if you are listening to this on the 31st, you get that special added gift, too. So, well, now it's time to return to James and Trivia Land to get the answers to the trivia. I know that was a long discussion topic, so hopefully everybody remembered some questions. But, James,
please remind us.
Remind us all of the questions, and let's see if we got them right, but we probably didn't.
Well, we're going to see how bad I'm at counting first. So my first question was, how many attractions in the resort have fast passes?
And I said 17, and Teresa went with 19.
So in theory, both of you are correct. It depends Ooh. If you want to count Fantasmic and World of Color.
Oh.
So the answer I would look for is 17. But if you include the nighttime spectaculars, it moves up to 19.
Okay, now I'm curious. What list?
I went off the official Disneyland website.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so the attractions are for you to. For those of you playing at home, Big Thunder Mountain, Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters, Fantasmic, if you want to count it, Haunted Mansion, Indiana Jones Adventure, It's a Small World, the Matterhorn, Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin, Space Mountain, Splash Mountain, and Star Tours, and then you go over to California Adventure, Goofy's Sky School, Grizzly River Run, Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, The Incredicoaster, Radiator Springs Racers, Soarin' Around the World, Midway Mania, and then World of Color, if you want to count that one.
Okay, what do we have extra?
So Monsters, Inc. does not, and Jungle Cruise does not. All right, question two.
Question two was, why were the original mermaids in the Submarine Lagoon retired?
And I said men swimming out there. Teresa said...
Chemicals.
And the answer I have written is... they were being exposed to the sun too much, which proved to be harmful to their skin and health.
That's kind of what Teresa said. So I'll give Teresa the point for that one.
The sun.
Because you were saying that they couldn't stay out there too long. Yeah. So I'll give that to you.
They're all very good answers and probably reasons that went into it. So the third question from Melissa was, most of the sails on the ships in Peter Pan's flight have black sails with white skulls. But if you're lucky, you'll get one with red sails and black skulls. How many have the red sails with black skulls?
I said 3.
And I said 10.
And the answer Melissa gave is 2, which she heard from a cast member last April.
Ooh. Oh.
All right. My memory's really bad today, apparently.
All right.
And our last question was, Michelle Pfeiffer worked at Disneyland in the 1970s as a face character. Who did she play?
I said Aurora, and Teresa said...
Cinderella.
She was actually Alice in the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Oh. Interesting. Alice.
I would not have thought that.
In the Electrical Parade. What a great place to be a face character.
Right? Always fun in that one. That's it for our trivia this week. But if you want to help me stump Tag and Teresa in next week or future episodes beyond that, like Melissa did this week, I'd love to have you email some questions. My email is producer@disneylandweekly.com. And as proven, they don't get to read these ahead of time, so we're probably going to stump them like we keep on doing.
So, in the theme of Halloween, and since this will be the last time we could talk about it for another, what, 10 months, 8 months, maybe?
364!
Something like that. Teresa will have a clock going up. It'll be how many days to Halloween. So I found this really cool post on Twitter from the Walt Disney Archives that has a picture of Yael Gracie, who is a Disney legend, putting final touches on an early version of the Hatbox Ghost. So not the Hatbox Ghost that we have today, but an early version of the Hatbox Ghost.
Much
so,
different. Very creepy.
Very creepy. The head that's in the box looks like a real head.
Yes, he's not as friendly looking as good old Hattie is today, which is interesting because when our current Hatbox Ghost first appeared, not that long ago, just a couple years ago, there was this whole big rumor about whether or not he was a part of the Haunted Mansion originally or not. Do you remember that whole big hullabaloo?
Yes.
And so it's interesting because I hadn't seen this image from the Disney archives until now, which I would have thought with the whole big hullabaloo, that image would have appeared much sooner.
I agree. Well, if you want to see that picture, we will have it linked in our show notes at DisneylandWeekly.com. Well, did you enjoy listening to this episode of Disneyland Weekly? Well, you can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you want access to the supporter chat like we always talk about, it's only 75 cents an episode. So please consider joining supporters like Nathan E. and head on over to DisneylandWeekly.com/support.
Well, we love seeing reviews on iTunes, plus it helps get our ranking better so more people can find us and join the community. If you want to join in the conversation, you can follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/DisneylandWeekly, on Twitter at DLWeekly, on Instagram at Instagram.com/DLWeekly, or by sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Don't forget to send trivia questions to producer@DisneylandWeekly.com to James. There is also the voicemail at 657-345-4445 and the P.O. box that is listed on our website at DisneylandWeekly.com. Please feel free to email, Facebook, Instagram, comment, tweet, call, mail, any questions, feedback, or suggestions that you may have about the show. The feedback that we receive will be discussed on the listener feedback specials that we record and post monthly. We are a little behind on our current feedback episode. We do plan on working on that later this week, so hopefully it will be up for you guys to listen later this week, early next week.
Well, we'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.